Good to see you. Right. Well, I think we're going to make a start. A warm welcome to you to the Moorgate Talks. We are trialling a slightly new thing, trialling a 20-minute meeting, really. In January, and so that's what we're gonna stick to. We're gonna have a short talk from Mark's Gospel on the topic of the grace of God, and then each week we will also have a short interview. And this week we are privileged to have Nick Stansbury with us, and we'll be speaking to him in just a minute. But before we do, if you have a Bible, do grab it. And turn open to Mark chapter 1. And as I said, the topic we're thinking about this month is the grace of God. And the question I want us to think about just for the next 10 minutes specifically is, what response will the spiritually filthy get from God when they come to him? What response will the spiritually filthy get from God when they come to him? Or more specifically, what response will the spiritually filthy get when they come to Jesus, who is our creator God? I don't know where you're coming from. This question may be a question you've never considered. It may be one you have all the time, or it may be one that you're just beginning to consider. But it's a question that was front and center on Jesus's agenda. What happens when the spiritually filthy come to God humbly, knowing their need of cleansing? I'm going to read from one of the very first events that happened in Jesus's public ministry, Mark chapter 1, verses 40 to 45. I'll just read verse 40. And a leper came to him, imploring him, and kneeling, said to him, "If you will, you can make me clean." Leprosy was the most devastating picture of spiritual uncleanness in the Jewish understanding. So the Old Testament book of Leviticus, many of you will know, is all about cleanness and uncleanness in the presence of the Holy God. There were quite a few ways you could get unclean. You could eat the wrong food. You could touch a dead body. Various bodily emissions would make you temporarily unclean. But of all of these different ways, none was so devastating as leprosy. Quoting from the book of Leviticus chapter 14, "The leprous person shall wear torn clothes, cover his upper lip and cry out, 'Unclean, unclean.' He shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. He shall remain unclean as long as he has the disease." For the vast majority of leprosy sufferers, if not for every single one, leprosy would have been permanent. So there is provision made in Leviticus chapter 14 for people who are somehow healed from it. But all the evidence we have points to the fact that people would never have recovered from leprosy. Ancient rabbis describe leprosy as death before death. One of the Jewish kings in the Old Testament, when asked to heal Naaman's prophecy, said, "Am I God that I can heal leprosy?" Today, we know that it's impossible to recover naturally from Hansen's disease, which is what we know now as leprosy. It was permanent. So the person with leprosy was, in effect, unclean before God forever. It was a desperate situation, socially ostracized. People used to throw stones at them, and rabbis dictated that people were not allowed within 50 meters of someone with leprosy. And of course, all of that on top of the fact that they were in a body that was slowly dying. And so when we read in verse 40, "a leper came to him," well, these are words that should have us on the edge of our seats. Because what we have here is the most vivid Old Testament picture of what it means to be unacceptable, unclean, filthy, spiritually, before God. He is desperate, this man. He kneels down before him, begs him, implores Jesus, if you will, you can make me clean. And so the question is, what happens when a spiritually filthy person comes to the eternal, holy God for cleansing? But before we read on, I just want us to notice something strange about his question. Did you notice that? He has his doubts, but not in the area we might expect. He doesn't doubt that Jesus can heal him of his incurable skin disease. I know you can, he says. The question for him is whether Jesus wants to. If you will, you can make me clean. And when you think about it, you can see why this is his question. He's had a lifetime of rejection. No one has wanted to have anything to do with him. His friends, he has none. His family, they've disowned him. Why then would God want anything to do with him? You may be listening and have that question. If I come to God, to my Creator, after my life, what will he do with me? I reckon actually this is the question that deep down we're all more likely to be asking, not so much can Jesus make me clean, but does he want to? Well, let me read on. Jesus, moved with pity, stretched out his hand and touched him and said, I will be clean. And immediately the leprosy left him and he was made clean. This is the true God. This is what he's really like. See, tragically, many of us see God as some kind of grumpy Victorian headmaster who can't wait to get the cane out for wrongdoers. But that is such a tragic misunderstanding of who God is. Rather, he's something completely different. And did you notice the extraordinary detail that Mark records that Jesus stretched out his hand? Just look down at that if you've got a Bible. Verse 40, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him. I've been wondering, why does Mark, and Mark is pretty sparing with details. He doesn't give us the choreography of Jesus's hands much in his gospel. Why does he record this detail? Matthew and Luke record the same detail with this healing. He stretched out his hand. Just pause to think about it. I take it is because all of the eyewitnesses remember this moment. They remember the horror of watching and realizing what Jesus was about to do as he stretched out his hand. It almost forces you to see it in slow motion. I wonder if you can imagine the gasp of horror among everyone watching. He's about to touch him. He stretched out his arm. And what about the leper himself? What was he thinking? When was the last time that he'd felt the touch of another human hand? The point is that Jesus moves towards this leper. He moved towards him. Can you believe it? Here is the epitome of spiritual filthiness under the law. Jesus, the Creator God, moved towards him and touches him. He's perfectly capable of healing him without touching, as he does on countless other occasions. But he does this to show not only how powerful he is, but also how willing he is and how tenderly he loves and treats the spiritually unclean who would come to him humbly. Anyone who would come to him humbly. See, I think our natural assumption is to think that if I were to come to God in all his purity and holiness, knowing all of my sin, knowing the filthiness of my heart, all the stuff I've thought and done that no one else knows, but the stuff I know that God knows I've done. If I were to come to him, the holy God, well, he would not let me within a million miles of him. But in Jesus, we see that not only does he want to heal our souls, he moves towards us. He stretches out his hand. He really loves us. He really wants to save the spiritually filthy, the desperate who come to him humbly. And just notice that Jesus' ability and authority to do this is without question. Verse 42, you see that immediately the leprosy left him and he was clean. Just imagine seeing that. Here is proof positive that Jesus truly is God's Messiah with all of the authority to cleanse us definitively and forever before God. Since the 1980s, we've actually had, you will know probably, we've actually had a combination of drugs that can push back and eventually heal leprosy. So after thousands of years, God has in his kindness provided us with a medical cure. But even that takes 6 months to a year to push leprosy out of the body. Here Jesus, with 2,000 years ago, with one touch, the leprosy was gone. And so he shows that as God's Messiah, he can make us spiritually clean forever. Two things then. He wants to. He stretches out his hand. He can. Immediately, the leprosy left him. This then is the wonderful grace of God. And if we're Christian, well, there may be all kinds of failures and sin weighing on us right now. We may feel that Jesus must have had enough of us by now. But Jesus says, no, I'm still the one who stretches out my hand in deep compassion for the spiritually filthy. And if you're investigating, listening in, well, the leper knows his need. Will you therefore come to Jesus humbly on your knees like this leper to your Creator, knowing your need of spiritual cleansing? And when you do, know that he will not turn you away, but he will stretch out his hands. Well, that's by way of looking at Jesus himself, but it would be great just to hear from someone who is a Christian working in the city, from Nick. So if you're there, Nick, I'm just going to see if I can tag you, see if I can make this work. If I pin your video and then my video. There we go. Nick, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
So, hi, Phil.
Just say briefly, how long have you worked in at LNG?
Yeah, a little over seven and a half years, something like that.
Great. When we were chatting earlier, you said that you went to university, and when you went to university, you were definitely not a Christian, right? So in fact, you described yourself as a Dawkins-esque anti-Christian, but then you left university believing in and following Jesus. So it'd be lovely, just great to hear what exactly happened.
I think it's a pretty fair description of where I'd have been with Jesus, to say that I hated him when I arrived at university. I hated him, and I felt some combination of hatred, loathing, and pity for those who I knew who did follow him. I'd been one of the leading campaigners at school to end compulsory attendance of chapel very unsuccessfully, and came to university delighted at the idea of not having to have anything to do with a church or going into a church at all. The very first day of a sort of formal attendance university, we had to go and matriculate in a cathedral. And we were lined up sort of like school children, two by two, to walk down to the cathedral from the college. And I was next to now someone who's one of our really dear friends, Sophie. And I turned to her. Other people would have made small talk. I decided to have a dig at Jesus. Very first thing I said to her, hello, my name's Nick, and I'm really angry that we have to go and do this. I can't believe we have to go and matriculate in an institution dedicated to learning in a building that is dedicated to this outdated notion of a creator God that I know no one will believe in. This university only has intelligent people who come to it. There cannot be a single person left at this university who believes in such a ridiculous and outdated notion as a creator God. And poor Sophie, somewhat taken aback, I think, by the fact that rather than saying, hello, I'm Nick, I'm here to study law, what's your name? She turned to me on the spot and said, well, actually, I am. I'm a Christian and I follow Jesus. And I turned to her in sort of stunned silence and said, well, I'm terribly sorry about that. And we wandered down in near silence all the way. But Sophie and a number of other Christians who I met in college, the floor I was on was stuffed full of Christians, but keen members of the Christian Union. They took me along to a course called Identity, which is a bit like Christianity Explored. We were given a little copy of Mark's Gospel, a little blue book, which I took back to college with me. I never went back. I only would agree to go to one of these Christianity Explored courses. And I tucked this little Mark's Gospel away in the back of my drawer, of my chest of drawers, fully intending to never read it ever again. In fact, I was pretty certain that I'd thrown the thing away a couple of times, but it turned out every time I threw it away, Sophie would find convenient excuse to extract it from the litter basket, dust it off and slide it back in the drawer in the hope that maybe I would turn to read it one day. And I sort of continued entertaining the idea of laughing at the Christians, trying not to laugh at them, until one day I had a knock on the door in the middle of the day. And it was one of the Christians on my floor who'd come and she said, look, I really need to tell you something. And I said, what's that? And she said, look, one day we're both going to die, you and I. And when I die, I know that I'm fine because my sins have been paid for by Jesus. But when you do, you are going to have to stand before God and pay for your own sins. And that's a really, really scary and serious thing. And you need to take it seriously. I know you think this is a great big joke, but that is the most serious thing in the entire world. And I beg you to take it seriously. And I sort of patted her on the back and sent her on her way. And I sat down on my bed and there in my bedside cabinet was this copy of Mark's Gospel. And I picked it up and I started reading it. And I read Mark's Gospel cover to cover. Didn't take me very long. And as I read the Gospel, I came to realize that actually I'd never stopped to give Jesus his words at any time, any care, any attention whatsoever. And as I was reading Mark's Gospel, I came to realize that the Jesus of the Bible was someone who spoke with great authority and spoke directly to me. And I realized I needed to listen to what he had to say. And so I went and I told some of these Christians that maybe I was prepared to consider that maybe I'd been wrong. And they'd suggested that I meet up with the guy, PhD student who was studying for last year for his PhD, and suggested that we met together to meet the Bible one-to-one, which we did for a year. Sometimes we'd meet for half an hour, sometimes we'd meet for a couple of hours. And he just took me slowly, patiently, kindly, graciously, gently through the pages of Scripture. We started with Colossians, we read Romans, and I think we read John together. And some point over that year, I came to realize that by the end of the year that I was trusting and following Jesus. And I don't think I could put my finger on one day when it was that I crossed from death to life. But I know that from that moment of accepting the possibility that maybe I was wrong about the claims of Christ to at the end of that year, realizing that actually I believed in Jesus and I was following him, that I became a Christian over that year.
And Nick, I've asked you, sort of when we were chatting about, you know, is there anything you can put your finger on in that year, you know, in terms of, you know, what struck you about Jesus? And you've said to me that you can't really remember anything sort of really sort of specific, just that there was a gradual thawing of your heart, as you put it. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's right. So I think it was... looking back with retrospective eyes that open to what's going on, to the sort of spiritual reality of what went on, I'd say that I came into that process with a heart that was urgent need of defrosting. It was frozen solid. It was just icy cold stone, and it needed to be thawed by the Spirit over as I was exposed to his words over the course of that year. And so I can't put my finger on any one thing. I can't say that it was one time reading the Bible with Richard or one particular bit of scripture. We're just gradually being exposed to what Jesus had to say through his words that sort of thawed my heart out.
Was it then a sense of, you know, a ring of truth, would you say then, as you sort of read the Bible, it just see, you know, you just sort of it seems to be true, or it carried that authority that you couldn't argue, you couldn't deny, or along those.
I think so. I mean, it's really hard for me to put my finger on and say there was one precise thing, but it was I read Jesus's words and Paul's words, and as we said, these were words that spoke with great authority, and I had authoritatively dismissed them as lies and falsehood, and was sitting under their authority and exposed them, really reading it and listening to it for the first time ever. You know, I'd gone to church as a child, been at cathedral, been at chapel twice a week through all my time at school, and actually had never actually listened to what Jesus had to say.
Of course, that makes a huge amount of sense, doesn't it? That when he came, you see in the Gospels, don't you, that the scribes, that the religious leaders of the day, well, people listened to Jesus and said, well, he speaks with authority and not as the other religious leaders of the day. So they were, they too, it's a similar, I think, to what you're saying as you come face to face with his words. Just one more question, Nick, in our time, very briefly, if you don't mind. That was 20 years ago. What does Jesus mean to you now? And I guess specifically in a workplace context as well, if you wouldn't mind just.
Yeah, thank you. So obviously there's lots of differences that following Jesus makes. I don't know all of them because I can't imagine myself as someone who isn't following Jesus to know what I would be like and what work experience would be like if I wasn't. But I think the two big ones really are sort of meaning and purpose and security. And I think I see people in the city, people I work around and with, and people who work at other firms that I know, struggle for both. They struggle for meaning and purpose, and they struggle for safety. And I think Jesus gives us both. Jesus gives us perfect security, that we know that whatever happens, however bad the things that happen to us in this world and this life are, that our eternal destiny is absolutely secure. That because like the leper, my sin has been made clean. Jesus has driven it out of me in the same way as with the leper. That my destiny is secure because he's paid. So I have perfect security. We don't need to chase after material things to give us that security in this life because we have perfect security in Jesus. And the second, I think, is meaning and purpose. To know that every day we come to work, struggle along to put the right trades on or to make our models add up to 100, and whilst knowing that actually our lives have great meaning and purpose to them, and that we're able to hold out Jesus to those around us, fulfilling the greatest purpose really that any of us could ever have. And I think both of those things are transformational, knowing we're safe and knowing that our days are full of purpose and meaning.
Thanks very much indeed, Nick, for joining us. That brings us to an abrupt end to our brief time together. But thank you very much, everyone, for coming. And we'll see you again next week for another brief 20 minutes time thinking about the grace of God. This will be on the website if you want to forward it on to anyone as a kind of podcast. But that brings us to the end of our formal time. Thanks very much for coming. If people do want to stick on, I'm going to stay on the line if anyone wants to chat about anything. But thanks for coming, everyone.
That's good. Thanks, Phil. Thanks, Nick.
Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. Thank you, Nick.
Thanks, Brian.
Good to see you over Zoom. Hope you're well.
Thanks, Nick.
Hey, Alfie. Cheers, guys.
Great stuff, Nick. Thank you so much again.
Not at all. Great to see you. Cheers, guys. Bye-bye.
Phil, can I just ask, Alfie and I are preaching in February. Do you want that to be a bit shorter as well?
No,